Welcome back, everyone, to the Deep Dive. We've got a real interesting one today, a case that really makes you think about contract modifications.
Oh, yeah, this one's a classic.
So can a printer, just raise the price in the middle of a project just because their costs went up? I mean, you'd think the answer would be a pretty clear no, right?
Right.
But, that's where things get kind of, tricky.
Yeah, for sure.
We're going to deep dive today into Gross Valentino Printing Co., v. Frederick S. Clark, a case out of Illinois back in 1983.
Great case.
This one really shows just how important it is to, really get those nuances of contract law.
Absolutely.
Especially when you're dealing with the UCC.
Oh, the UCC, the Uniform Commercial Code, always keeps things interesting.
It does. It really does. And what's really fascinating about this case, and I think this is where we should start, is how it all kind of comes down to, hinges on this difference between goods and services.
You hit the nail on the head there. That's the crux of it.
So we've got our magazine publisher, Frederick S. Clark, and he contracts with Gross Valentino Printing Co. to, print his magazine, Cine Fantastique.
Makes sense.
Now, initially, everything seems pretty straightforward. They agree on a price, $6,695, back in July of 79.
Okay.
But here's where the plot thickens a little bit.
Okay, I'm listening.
After an initial layout meeting, the printer comes back and they're like, whoa, our costs have gone up.
Oh.
We got to bump this price up to $9,300.
Woof, that's a pretty significant jump.
That's a big jump, right? I mean, I would be fuming if I was the publisher. So is he just kind of stuck with that new price?
Well, that's where our friend the UCC comes in, the Uniform Commercial Code. The court really had to figure out, was this contract primarily for goods, the actual physical magazines?
Yeah, right.
Or was it more about the services, the act of printing?
Ah, I see.
And they use this thing called the predominant purpose test to figure that out.
Okay, so it's not quite as simple as it might seem at first glance.
Not at all.
So for those of you listening who might not be super familiar with this whole legal test thing, how does it work? What is this predominant purpose test all about?
So it's all about figuring out what's the main point of the contract, what's its primary purpose. Think of it like this. You're buying, let's say, a custom design suit.
Okay.
No, the fabric, that's a good, right.
Right.
But the real value, the thing you're really paying for, is the tailor's skill, their artistry, that unique design they create.
Makes sense.
So that makes it primarily a service, you see.
Uh-huh.
Now, in Gross Valentino, the court really honed in on the fact that the publisher, he was basically shopping around for the lowest printing price.
Interesting.
He was almost treating the printing like, any other commodity.
Like a commodity. Right?
And that, along with the fact that the final product, the magazines, those are tangible things, that led them to say, you know what, this is a contract for goods.
So it falls under the UCC.
Exactly. Which means that lovely Uniform Commercial Code, that's the set of rules that governs this whole agreement.
Okay, that makes sense. So how did that distinction, how did that affect the outcome of the case then? I mean, I'm guessing the UCC has some maybe some unique rules when it comes to changing prices like this.
Oh, it most definitely does. And this is where things get really interesting.
All right, lay it on me.
See, unlike common law contracts, where you typically need some new exchange of value, what we lawyers call consideration, to change an existing agreement.
Right.
The UCC, it's a bit more flexible. It allows for modifications even without that additional consideration.
Okay, so hold on. Let me just break that down a little bit for our listeners.
Mm.
So consideration, that's basically the legal term for something of value being exchanged as part of a contract.
Right.
So in this case, under the UCC, the printer didn't have to, offer the publisher anything extra to justify raising the price.
You got it. And if that wasn't enough, not only did the publisher sign a new purchase order with that higher price, he even went ahead and made a partial payment. And the court basically said, those actions, that's a clear sign you're accepting these new terms.
So even though it seemed, from the outside, maybe a little unfair, those actions basically sealed the deal for him.
Yeah, pretty much.
But I'm sure he didn't just take this lying down.
Oh, no, not at all.
Did he try to, fight back, push back at all?
Oh, he absolutely did. The publisher, he came back swinging with three main defenses.
Okay, let's hear them.
One, lack of consideration. Two, fraudulent misrepresentation.
Okay.
And three, business compulsion. Now, as we've already talked about, lack of consideration, that argument doesn't really hold water under the UCC.
Right, right. That's that key difference between UCC and common law contracts. We got to keep that in mind. What about those other defenses, though? Did he claim that the printer, like, intentionally misled him about the price?
That's where that fraudulent misrepresentation defense comes in. He argued, the publisher did, that that initial price quote, well, that was misleading. But the court didn't quite buy it. Remember, the printer explained that the price hike was due to these, like, unforeseen outsourcing costs.
Right.
It wasn't some deliberate scheme to, you know, trick the publisher.
Mm-hmm.
The court saw it as, like, an honest mistake, not an intentional deception.
Okay, so no smoking gun there.
Nope.
What about this business compulsion argument, though?
Yeah.
What was the publisher's reasoning behind that?
So basically he's saying, look, I was forced into this. I had to accept that new price because of the deadline for my magazine.
Yeah.
You know, it felt like he was trapped, like there was no other way out.
Right. Yeah, I could see how that would feel like a total no-win situation.
Mm-hmm.
But legally speaking, was that really enough to, you know, prove this business compulsion idea?
Not quite. The court really emphasized the fact that the publisher willingly signed that new purchase order and made that partial payment, remember?
Right, right.
And they even said, I'm quoting here, to show compulsion, one must indicate how legal redress would be inadequate.
Wow.
In other words, the publisher had to show not only did he have no other options, but going to court, that wouldn't have solved the problem either.
So basically feeling pressured, that's not enough.
Right.
You got to demonstrate there's like an actual legal constraint.
Exactly.
I mean, this case really highlights, I think, how crucial it is to not just know your rights, but to have, you know, real solid evidence if you're going to try to use a defense like this.
Couldn't agree more.
So for our listeners who might find themselves in, you know, a similar situation, what are the big takeaways from Gross Valentino v. Clark? What wisdom can we pull out of this whole legal battle?
Well, first and foremost, that predominant purpose test, that's got to be top of mind. It's so important to figure out, does the UCC even apply to your contract?
Yeah.
When you've got this mix of goods and services, go look closely. What's the main purpose of the agreement?
Right.
Is it more about getting that tangible product, or is it really the service itself that's the big value?
That's a really good point.
Yeah.
It's not always so clear cut. So knowing that test, that can make a huge difference.
Yeah.
What else should our listeners be thinking about here?
Second big takeaway. Modifications under the UCC, they don't need extra consideration to be binding.
Right.
So even if you're a small business, you've got real power to renegotiate terms, you know, if you understand the rules of the game.
Okay.
But here's the catch. If you say, okay, I agree to that change, whether you say it out loud or just do something that shows you agree,
mm-hmm.
Well, you might be stuck with it, even if you didn't get anything new in return. That's a big change from common law contracts, and it can really trip people up.
Yeah, it's almost like a buyer beware situation for anyone dealing with these UCC agreements.
Definitely.
You really got to be aware of how it works to protect yourself. Any other words of wisdom for our listeners, especially about those defenses we were talking about earlier?
For sure. If you ever need to use a defense like, you know, fraud or business compulsion, remember, hard evidence is key. Just saying something happened or saying you felt pressured, that won't cut it in court. You need specific facts, details that back up what you're saying.
Okay.
Having good documentation, clear communication, that can be a lifesaver in these situations.
So understanding the ins and outs of the UCC,
being
really careful about changes to the agreement, and having your ducks in a row with strong evidence if you need to defend yourself.
Exactly.
Those are some of the big takeaways here. But it's not just about, you know, memorizing legal rules, right?
Yeah.
It's about seeing how those rules actually play out in real world scenarios, how they affect businesses like the ones our listeners run.
100%. In this case, while it's about printing, the implications go way beyond that.
Yeah.
Think about software development, construction projects, even event planning. These UCC principles, they can pop up anywhere. That's why cases like this are so valuable. They're like a legal compass, helping us navigate this complicated world of contract law.
It's like, if it walks like a UCC contract, talks like a UTC contract, it probably is a UCC contract. But before we wrap up, I've got a question for our listeners to think about, something to really chew on. So how might this case impact negotiations and contracts in other industries, you know, where goods and services are kind of all mixed together?
Oh, it's a fantastic question. And it really underlines how important it is for businesses to be like super clear about the terms of their agreements up front.
Right.
Especially when you've got that blend of goods and services.
Yeah.
Like having really detailed contracts spelled out meticulously specifically addressing those what if the price changes scenarios or modifications.
Right.
That can save a lot of headaches down the line, let me tell you.
Absolutely, yeah. It's always better to get out ahead of those things.
Bro, 1,000%.
Than to end up in some big, costly legal fight later on.
For sure.
So as we kind of wrap up our deep dive into Gross Valentino v. Clark, what's the big takeaway for our listeners? What should they really be walking away with?
You know, I think the biggest thing here is the power of knowledge. Just understanding these legal finer points, even if you're not a lawyer yourself.
Right.
That can be so empowering when you're doing business, making deals.
Oh, you've got that extra little bit of savvy.
Exactly. Whether you're writing up a contract, hammering out a negotiation, or just trying to make sure you know what your rights are.
Yeah.
Being aware of cases like Gross Valentino gives you these insights, you know? Real competitive edge.
Well said. Well said. Huge thank you to our expert for joining us today on this deep dive into contract law and the UCC. Always a pleasure having you on.
My pleasure. I always love these legal deep dives, and it's great to share what I know with your listeners.
And to everyone listening out there, keep exploring, keep learning, keep diving deep into the legal world. Until next time.